You're listening to Catholic Talk Radio in Chicago and the suburbs on Relevant Radio 950 AM.
Good morning. I'm Cardinal Francis George. For the next hour, the Archdiocese of Chicago will be hosting discussions on issues, people, and associations that touch our lives. Welcome to the Catholic Community of Faith.
Good morning, everybody. This is Bob Gilligan of the Catholic Conference of Illinois, and welcome to our show. I think we're going to have a very interesting show this morning, or at least we hope to. Hopefully everybody is drying out from the very soggy weekend we've had, unprecedented levels of rain, and overall just a very difficult weekend for some. And our prayers are with those on the northwest side of the city and anybody who has been afflicted by the terrible rains this weekend. It was really something. It pretty much rained from Friday through Sunday, and like I said, our prayers are with all of those out there who are afflicted by the bad weather, and hopefully they will find the strength and courage to continue on. It is 9:01 a.m. here in Chicago, and we are going to be talking this morning to, we're very fortunate to have with us two guests who will talk a little bit about some of the challenges that we are having in the Catholic community with regard to our ministries. One of those challenges is probably ongoing. It's not a new thing. It will probably continue in the future. It's been going on for quite a while. And it relates specifically to our healthcare ministries. And I guess the question on the table is Catholic healthcare in itself of a ministry? Is it an apostolate or is it a secular purpose? And it seems recently that there's been an increasing number of cases in the courts going through that are questioning the status of our property tax exemptions as it relates to health care. We're going to be talking about that specifically in the first half of the show with Sister Jean DeBlois from the Aquinas Institute in St. Louis. And then in the second half of our show, we hopefully will be joined by a representative of the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, the staff person, Deidre McQuaid, who works in the pro-life office. We want to talk about another attack on our ministries per se, and it's probably even more than that, but there's legislation that has been introduced in Congress. The short title is called FOCA, the Freedom of Choice Act, and it's been changed a couple times through the years, and we're going to talk to Deirdre about where that is sits in Congress and their advocacy efforts in trying to defeat it, and hopefully people will know about a campaign that is now on the USCCB website. It's been linked to our website as well, and it talks about the pledge to oppose FOCA, and we'll be talking with Deirdre McQuaid in the second half of the show. Well, with that said, we are going to be talking now, and hopefully we'll have Sister Jean on the line with us, and let's see if she's there. Sister Jean, are you with us?
Good morning.
Good morning, Sister. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Thank you. We're good. Thank you so much for joining us this morning, and I guess we'll just plunge right into our topic this morning, which is about Catholic health care. First of all, maybe we should introduce Sister Jean a little bit, who is currently with the Aquinas Institute in St. Louis, our neighbors just to the south. And also, she sits on the board of directors of Ascension Healthcare. And for those who may not know, Ascension Healthcare is very involved with healthcare in the Chicagoland area. They are the sponsors of the St. Anthony's Hospital, which is on the west side of the city. It serves a disproportionate number of Hispanics and low-income people, and it's a ministry that we're very proud of here in the Archdiocese. And Ascension Health has hospitals all over the country. Is that correct, Sister?
That's correct. I think we have hospitals and other kinds of health ministries in about 20 states.
Great. Okay. Sister, what we wanted to talk about a little bit this morning for the 25 minutes or so that we have with you here today is I think you're familiar in your work through the past couple years about Catholic health care, and it seems like recently we've had some challenges to our tax-exempt status. And one of the things that, at least in Illinois, that we fight is the different classifications of tax-exempt statuses. Is it a charitable use or is it a charitable property? But also, one of the questions that has come up recently is that, is Catholic health care a religious purpose? Should we be exempt from property taxes because of the religious nature of what we do? And I think it begs the question for our listeners that I guess the broad question is Catholic healthcare a ministry of the church, or is it simply a secular purpose that anybody could do? Is it any different from anything else that a secular organization could do?
Well, I've long been an advocate for the position that Catholic healthcare is a ministry of the Church. It exists primarily to carry out what we would call, in kind of old language, the healing mission of Jesus in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I think in more contemporary language, we talk about Catholic healthcare as a ministry of the Church because it carries on the mission of the Church in the world. And the mission of the Church in the world is to bring about, ultimately, the reign of God. Now, you know, we have to bring that down from 30,000 feet
yeah.
to ground level and say, well, what does that mean in the here and now? Well, it means doing things like not just caring for poor and vulnerable people, but working in the advocacy arena to try and address the causes of poverty and vulnerability. it means that we, you know, carry on the work of the Church in healing in what have today become huge business organizations. Ascension Health is the largest Catholic not-for-profit healthcare system in the country and probably in the world. It is a big business,
mm-hmm.
but it is carried on in light of a set of specific goals that relate to the mission of the Church in the world, and we strive to do everything, make decisions, give care, do hiring, do whatever we do, through the lens of the values of the Catholic Christian tradition, the norms of the gospel. And so I think it's clear, if you understand what Catholic healthcare is and how it goes about doing what it does, that it is not simply another business organization doing whatever they do. It is a business that we do in a manner that is consistent with the Catholic tradition, the values of the gospel, and with the ultimate goal of transforming the present reality on behalf of the reign of God.
I think one of the problems that we're getting into in the modern era is when sometimes just the perception or seeing a large Catholic hospital, and there are a number of them in the Chicagoland area. I think we have 46 Catholic hospitals in Illinois. I think we provide almost 30% of all the hospital beds in the state. So it is a significant presence. And I think one of the things that many people, both from just sort of a knee-jerk reaction and maybe from a professional perspective in terms of policymakers, is they look at these large buildings, there's very professional staff there, there are impressive operations, and maybe it doesn't look like the stereotypical, for lack of a better example, sort of the soup kitchen, you know, that I think we've been grown up to think that what not-for-profit healthcare should look like. I think that right now, it's interesting that I think Catholic healthcare is getting torn between both worlds. It has to be professional in terms of the services it's delivered. It has to deliver good quality care. But on the other hand, it does so based on, as you were saying, the mission of what we are called to do, which is to bring Christ's healing presence into the world.
Correct. I hear that concern all the time. Why can't we just go back to the way the sisters did it
right.
in 1850?
Right.
Well, the reality is that this isn't 1850. This is 2008. And soup kitchens, hands-on care, dealing one-on-one with people who are in need are all very important ways to extend the healing mission of Jesus in the world. But Brian Hare, the wonderful Jesuit theologian who I believe at the present moment is at Georgetown, but he's been the president of Catholic Charities, he's
right.
the dean of the Harvard Divinity School, etc. Brian Hare said in a talk he gave in, I think it was 1995, that you cannot seek to transform a complex society such as ours simply through the activities of individuals who are doing good things, working in soup kitchens. Those are good things. You can't seek to transform a complex society such as ours simply by that kind of activity. We need institutions, Brian Hare said, and we need institutions that touch people at all the important points along the life continuum, at birth and at death and at every moment in between. And Catholic healthcare, as well as other ministries of the Church, through their institutional presence and, to use a bad word today, through their power
mm-hmm.
that institutions give them, have the opportunity to touch people at the points in their lives where they are in great need and to make a significant difference not just in the lives of the individuals, but in the life of the society as well.
And that's the presence that we have in those, I think, as I said, 46 Catholic hospitals that are at least in Illinois, and I know there's many others throughout various parts of the country. We have to take a quick break. It is 9:10 a.m. in Chicago. If you wish to join our conversation today with Sister Jean DeBlois of Ascension Health, the number here is area code 312-751-1979. We're talking about Catholic ministry, Catholic health care, and we'll be back after this brief message to continue our conversation.
October is Respect Life Month, when the Church celebrates the sanctity of human life from the moment of conception until natural death. During this month, the Archdiocese of Chicago will sponsor education and prayer activities to spread the gospel of life. Join Cardinal Francis George and the Archdiocesan Respect Life Office at the Celebration of Life Mass on Saturday, September 20th at 4:30 p.m. at St. Cornelius Parish. All parish Respect Life coordinators and committee members will receive a special commissioning from the Cardinal for their year of service. Again, that's Saturday, September 20th at 4:30 p.m. at St. Cornelius Parish, located at 5430 West Foster Avenue in Chicago. For more information on this or other Respect Life Month activities, call the Respect Life Office at 312-751-5355 or log on to www.respectlifechicago.org. We hope to see you on September 20th as we launch Respect Life Month.
Whether they are young or old, hungry or addicted, homeless or friendless, Catholic Charities walks with its clients, bringing them help and hope. For 90 years, Catholic Charities has empowered families and individuals of all races and religious backgrounds in communities throughout the Archdiocese of Chicago. Help Catholic Charities fulfill its mission to serve the poor and underprivileged. If you can help, visit our website at catholiccharities.net or mail a donation to Catholic Charities, 721 North of South Street, Chicago, Illinois, 60610. Thank you.
Pan de vida, cuerpo del Señor.
Experience La Santa Misa Dominical, the Sacred Sunday Mass, televised every Sunday at 8 a.m. on the Azteca America Network, WOCK-TV, and its affiliate stations. Here's the director of the Archdiocesan Office for Hispanic Catholics, Father Claudio Diaz.
The Spanish-language televised Mass feels a hunger for the gospel message. It's delivered in the audience's native tongue and in their own cultural context. It's a beacon of hope for our Spanish-speaking faithful who find it difficult or impossible to attend Sunday Mass.
Your help is needed to keep the Spanish-language Mass on the air. Please send donations to Spanish Mass, Post Office Box 1979, Chicago, Illinois, 60611. That's Spanish Mass, Post Office Box 1979, Chicago, Illinois, 60611.
The televised Mass has been a tremendous outreach for the growing Latino population throughout the Chicago area. Thanks for your support to this important ministry, and may God bless you.
Welcome back to our show, everybody. This is Bob Gilligan of the Catholic Conference of Illinois. We're talking about a little bit about health, Catholic health care and some of the challenges to it right now. And we're on the line with Sister Jean DeBlois from the Aquinas Institute in St. Louis. Sister Jean, we probably omitted. Maybe you should describe a little bit about what the Aquinas Institute is and what does it do?
Aquinas Institute of Theology is a Dominican school, graduate school of theology. It's basically the seminary for the central province of the Dominicans, but for many, many years, it has educated both lay and religious, Catholic and other than Catholic, people in the theological traditions and spiritual tradition of the Roman Catholic Church to prepare them for ministry in the world.
Great. You know, we're talking a little about the challenges to Catholic health care. I think right now it's taken the form of challenges to property taxes and property tax exemptions. But we've been here before. I think a couple years ago the focus was on reproductive services and was it Merger Watch that was looming out there? And so this is not something new to the world of Catholic health care.
Not at all. And I have to say that I'm frequently befuddled by people who attack Catholic health care who really don't know, you know, exactly what we're about and what we do. They seem to have a particular axe to grind at whatever time in history they're coming after Catholic health care. But I think that the world would be very, very much harmed if Catholic health care could not continue to operate the way it does, because, you know, you said hospital. Catholic health care is much more than hospital.
True. Good point.
We reach out into the community in many and varied ways to take care of people that otherwise would never receive health care, and to continually try to chip away at our ability to do that, I think, is a disservice, not just to Catholic health care, but to the communities where we serve as well.
What do you think motivates some of the challenges to Catholic health care? You know, like I said, I think the Catholics for a Free Choice, they were fairly prevalent on Merger Watch a few years ago.
Correct.
And now it seems to have shifted a little bit on the local governments looking for money to tax not-for-profit Catholic health care. Is there anything in particular you think is motivating those challenges, or is it just
the nature of the business? Certainly with regard to organizations like Merger Watch and Catholics for a Free Choice, people disagree with the Church's position on abortion. The Church is very clear. We don't do anything to take human life, because life is a gift from God. But there are people who disagree with that, and they want to go after organizations that seek to serve in a manner that is consistent with the teaching of the Church, and to undermine our ability to do that. With regard to the tax issue, I think there's a similar motivation. It's certainly not around abortion, I don't think, but I think there's a similar motivation that people simply don't believe that we're doing what we say we do, and say that we're committed to, and that somehow that we're not motivated by the values of the gospel, and that we don't act upon the values that we say we act upon. Well, I think they don't know who we are or what we do. Mm. If they did, I think they'd have a very different approach to Catholic health care.
Is that part of our responsibility, or neglecting our responsibility, or are those just sort of trends that have come off in the last couple of years that we're still catching up on?
I think it's,
well, both.
99% our responsibility. Before I've been at Aquinas Institute of Theology for almost 9 years, but before I worked here, I was at the Catholic Health Association for about 6 years, and one of the things that we learned from our members is that for many, many years, we have kind of had a false kind of humility where we were not willing to tell our story in the communities where we serve. So I'd say maybe 15 years ago, Catholic healthcare started to try to, as they say, get our message out into the communities by telling our story about community benefit, what we really do for communities, but in particular for the poor and vulnerable persons who are members of the communities where we serve. But we still have a lot to do in getting that message out.
To you, Sister, you know, one of the things I find striking is it's election season, obviously, and so we're doing a lot of presentations in the parishes about faithful citizenship and about voting. And one of the things that the Catholic Conference is particularly has a front row seat for is just the length and breadth of what we do for, the average person in Illinois on a daily basis. We often talk about the numbers of people that we educate free of charge, and it's funny because, like, a lot of the people that come to these forums, they don't seem to make the connection between the same gospel values that they subject themselves to willingly on a Sunday at Mass. It doesn't seem to translate once they leave those doors of the church in terms of, this is the presence of the church in the world. What form does that take? It takes the form of the schools. It takes the form of the hospital, the nursing home, etc. We just don't seem to make that connection as Catholics between I think what you were saying is the physical presence of health care in the community with our gospel values. And we seem to be missing something here.
Well, yeah, I'm giving a talk tomorrow at a parish in O'Fallon on ethics in an election year. And one of the things that I've been grappling with as I've been preparing this talk is how we do make that connection, how we say that we're Catholic Christian people who believe in the dignity of every person, that we have a preferential concern for poor and vulnerable mm-hmm. people, and that we commit ourselves wholeheartedly to the common good. Well, as you say, those are nice things to hear and to talk about in church on Sundays. But I think our, you know, the society of which we're a part is so disaffected with this notion of the common good that it's me first. And yeah. I think many of us, and I have to say, you know, that sometimes I'm in that boat.
Sure.
Many of us think, when I think about, well, who shall I vote for? Now, I don't have to worry about taxes because I'm a religious, so I don't pay taxes. But, you know, do I vote for the person who's going to say, we're going to cut taxes for this piece of the population, and I'm in that piece of the population, and therefore we're not going to have any kind of public mm-hmm. programs, there's no entitlements. I think it's really difficult to sustain a commitment to the values of our tradition when our own self-interest kind of is put at odds with those values. And I think the values of the Catholic tradition call us to kind of an other-centeredness that will be very challenging when we go to the polls in November.
It's very difficult. I think as you're talking, I'm thinking of that one sentence. I don't think it's in Faithful Citizenship this time. I think it was last time it talked about the question to ask is not, are you better or worse off than you were 4 years ago, but the question to ask is how are we, all of us together, better or worse off than we were 4 years, 8 years ago, whatever you want to say.
Absolutely.
And that's a different question, and it's a different answer. Yeah,
right.
Entirely.
Well, you know, one of the central teachings of our Catholic moral tradition is that we are social by nature. That is,
right.
We are born into and meant for community, and that we will thrive in the context only of community, and that we have rights vis-a-vis the community, but mm-hmm. we have corresponding obligations.
Right, rights and responsibilities, yeah, yeah. You got it. You're doing well on the Catholic social teaching part. I've learned a lot about it myself. We have to take a quick break here. We're going to wrap up for the final 5-6 minutes with Sister Jean DeBlois of the Aquinas Institute in St. Louis, talking about some of the challenges of Catholic healthcare and what can we do about it. Let's be a transformative voice for the church in the world, and one of the ways to do that is through our healthcare ministries, because that's what Christ did. He called it to heal the sick. This is Bob Gilligan. It's 922. The phone number is 312-751-1979. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
September is Hunger Awareness Month, and Catholic Charities has many rewarding opportunities for you to get involved. Did you know that despite our community's abundant food, many families, including children, live in hunger? I'm Father Mike Boland of Catholic Charities, asking for your support. Organize a food drive at your parish or at your child's school. Walk in our 5th annual Mary Jane Murphy Memorial Hunger Walk on September 30th. Visit our website to make a $20 donation, and we'll send you an eco-friendly Catholic Charities reusable grocery sack. For more information, go to catholiccharities.net/hunger or call 312-655-7315. That's catholiccharities.net/hunger or 312-655-7315. Thank you for helping Catholic Charities in our fight against hunger.
You're invited to watch The Church, the Cardinal, and You this weekend on cable television. Here's host Graziano Marcheschi.
Cardinal George leads a group of Chicago-area faithful on a pilgrimage to the Shrine of Our Lady of Lourdes in France. We have highlights of that journey. World Youth Day is celebrated in Sydney, Australia, as well as here in Chicago at St. Hyacinth Basilica. We'll take you to both celebrations. And we'll give you a behind-the-scenes look at Relevant Radio, bridging the gap between faith and everyday life.
For several interesting stories about the Archdiocese, please watch The Church, the Cardinal, and You this weekend on cable television. Go to www.archchicago.org and click on Radio TV for the time and cable channel in your area. That's www.archchicago.org. The Church, the Cardinal, and You. Compelling television about your archdiocese.
Welcome back. This is Bob Gilligan of the Catholic Conference talking with Sister Jean DeBlois down in St. Louis at the Aquinas Institute, talking a little bit about the challenges facing Catholic healthcare and being a transformative voice in our society today. The number is 312-751-1979. Sister Jean, in the last 5-6 minutes or so, I know you talk a little bit about the role of the Aquinas Institute, but let's try to tie the two together. We're talking about some of the challenges in Catholic healthcare, and I know the Aquinas Institute's trying to do something about it. And I think you're talking about training lay leaders and people who are going to be in ministry. Is that right? It close?
That's very close. 8 years ago, Aquinas Institute started a program to a formation program, really, mm-hmm. for leaders in Catholic healthcare, leaders across Catholic healthcare at all levels, to give them sound theological education as well as development of their own spirituality. And so for the past 8 years, we have recruited 5 cohorts. We do this in a cohort model. People enter the program together. They go through the whole program together. It's what we call internet-enhanced or a hybrid model of learning. So most of the coursework is delivered online, but people come together mid-course for about three and a half days of mm-hmm. intensive study and formative spirituality. This is a master's degree in healthcare mission, but Aquinas Institute also partners with Ascension Health and Trinity Health to work with them around the same kind of agenda, theological education and spiritual formation. It's a certificate rather than a degree mm-hmm. program. But one of the greatest hopes that I have for the future of Catholic healthcare is that there are so many lay women and men who are deeply committed to Catholic healthcare as a ministry of the Church that they carry on their full-time work and participate in these programs and do wonderful work and are able to translate the theological education into kind of real-time outcomes for the work that we do in this ministry.
I think it's important, too, that that work continue. I know that the Illinois Catholic Healthcare Association is also embarking on similar efforts, and I know up here in Chicagoland that Resurrection Healthcare is also embarking on some similar type themes, which is to the degree that they can, they try to educate and expose all the employees of Catholic healthcare in terms of the traditional values and the gospel that is the founding premise of the institution that they're working for. And perhaps, you know, in the past we haven't been as strong in that area as we could be. And I think the efforts that the Aquinas Institute and those other institutions are having, hopefully that will result in some tangible change as we move forward. Any other the major challenges? It looks like it's in the area of property taxes exemptions now. It seems like that seems to be most of the focus that we're hearing. And I think one of the things that, just real briefly, we'll talk a little bit, you started talking about it earlier, is the whole question of charity care and what is free and what is not. And it seems like a Catholic hospital does so much more, and Catholic healthcare does so much more than it's given credit for, if you will. I know in my neighborhood, I'm very close to St. Joseph's Hospital, and the number of programs that they have for the community is overwhelming that we can take advantage of. And I think it's a shame that, you know, in part, Catholic healthcare has been able to do more to get the word out about some of the things that they do, which would result in, I think, some more credit for these questions when they come up on whether there should be a property tax exemption or not.
Well, I think you're correct. You know, getting the word out takes resources, it takes personnel, it takes energy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you ask most people in Catholic healthcare where they would rather put their resources,
yep.
personnel, and energy, it's in delivering the program.
The services, sure.
And so, you know, you can only slice the economic pie in so many pieces. And if you're really in the community providing care for persons who are poor and vulnerable, as well as all the other things that we do, sometimes we just don't have the resources to devote to, you know, splashy posters and billboards
right.
and telling people what we're doing.
I think we're doing better, though.
I think we are.
Yeah, we are.
We could certainly improve, but, you know, I wish people that want to go after us for whatever reason would spend a day, a week in a Catholic organization to see what we do beyond taking care of people within our walls. How committed we are to the people in the communities where we serve. And it's people across the economic spectrum.
That's true.
But we do have a preference for poor and vulnerable people. And I don't think, you know, I don't think people understand that in addition to the community benefit that we offer, the traditional charity care, that is people come who can't pay and we say, well, that's fine, we'll take care of you anyway, other programs for the poor, there's a huge amount of unpaid cost of public programs like Medicaid.
Medicare, Medicaid.
You know, we take care of, in any Catholic hospital that I know of, we take care of anybody who comes in, whether you've got Medicare, Medicaid, private insurance, or nothing. And the nothing and the Medicaid and Medicare are really, you know, we take huge losses on those.
Disproportionate number of Catholic hospitals are high Medicaid hospitals. Yeah.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, we're not just into acute care. We care for people across the continuum. And so there's a lot of Catholic health care that's going on outside of the walls, the brick and mortar, done in clinics, done by one of our graduates for a time, brought health care to people in rural areas where there were no brick-and-mortar health care organizations. She drove a van and took a physician around with her and cared for people in their homes or in the gym at the local school. And that's not unusual. I think if people who want to go after Catholic healthcare for whatever reason, really understood what Catholic healthcare does around this nation and in many parts of the world, I think they'd have a very different view of who we are and what we do.
I think you're absolutely right. Sister, we have to take a break. Thanks so much for joining us this morning. I think your comments have been very accurate, and our best wishes to you and to the Illinois Catholic Healthcare Association up here in terms of expanding that base of knowledge so we all have a more definitive understanding of the transformative process of Catholic healthcare. We're going to be right back after this message to talk about another, perhaps, attack on Catholic healthcare. We're going to be talking about the Freedom of Choice Act with Deirdre McQuaid of the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. Don't go away. We'll be right back after this brief message.
People all over America, what have you done for your marriage today?
It's a good question.
Boy, I gave a huge hug this morning, like a really big squeeze.
I took the baby while she worked.
I got up with the baby while he slept.
Yeah. We've actually organized a date night tonight.
I cooked my husband's favorite breakfast.
Well, I've done today what I usually do, and that is obey.
What have you done for your marriage today? Don't forget the small stuff. Need ideas? Go to foryourmarriage.org. A message from the Catholic Communication Campaign.
The cemetery ministry is a core ministry of our Catholic faith tied to the corporal works of mercy. Cardinal George says, "It's comforting to know that our Catholic cemeteries are caring for the remains of our loved ones awaiting the resurrection." There are 43 Archdiocese of Chicago cemeteries willing to help you during times of loss. Call 708-449-6100 for assistance. Catholic Cemeteries, serving the Catholic community since 1837.
Do you know what's going on in your church around the corner or around the world? Do you want to hear stories about your faith? Do you want to help shape Catholic thought? If you said yes, subscribe to the Catholic New World, the newspaper for the people of the Archdiocese of Chicago. Call 312-655-7777 or visit us at catholicnewworld.com. The Catholic New World, a world beyond your church, a church beyond your world.
You're listening to Catholic Talk Radio in Chicago and the suburbs on Relevant Radio 950 AM.
Every Monday through Friday from 9 to 10 AM, the Archdiocese of Chicago presents programming about the people, the issues, and the faith that affect all our lives. Thanks for staying with us here on Relevant Radio 950 AM. Now again, the Catholic Community of Faith.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Bob Gilligan of the Catholic Conference of Illinois talking about some of the public policy issues affecting our state and the Catholic community. We were talking with Sister Jean DeBlois of the Aquinas Institute about some of the challenges with Catholic healthcare. And actually, the next topic sort of flows into that, which is a challenge to not only Catholic healthcare, but to all of us to get more involved and to help make you more aware of what's going on with a particular piece of legislation that's pending in Washington, called the Freedom of Choice Act, or better known as FOCA. We have with us Deirdre McQuaid of the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, the pro-life office. Is that correct, Deirdre?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Thanks for coming on our show a little bit this morning. Let me give the phone number in case people are interested in registering in on this topic, 312-751-1979. Deirdre, FOCA, Freedom of Choice Act. Let's start. What is it specifically? It's not good, I know that, but why is it? What is it? What does it do? What are the threats?
It's terrible. It is extreme. It is a federal law that's been proposed a number of years running, but has never been passed. Certainly the threat of a veto under this current Bush administration would never have let it become law. But the so-called Freedom of Choice Act, I can't say choice without saying so-called, is an extreme product of the abortion rights agenda and their allies in Congress. If they have their way, reasonable and widely supported and constitutionally sound abortion regulations will be knocked down nationwide. FOCA would effectively make unlimited abortion on demand our national policy, which goes beyond what even Roe versus Wade requires in terms of the laws of our land. So it would not only would codify Roe, it would go beyond Roe versus Wade.
So I think part of the challenge for us here in the States is that any oversight or any additional information that would any laws that are currently on the books that would communicate to somebody considering contemplation of that procedure of an abortion or any parental notification law, informed consent, et cetera, would be null and void.
It certainly seems that way. What FOCA calls for is, first, they name the right to an abortion a fundamental right.
Yeah.
Which
the
it
founding
is not.
Fathers would have had fun with that one.
Even according to the Supreme Court, it is not a fundamental right, certainly in light of not only Roe, but then Casey in 92. This right was not considered a fundamental right, that the state does have an interest in unborn human life and that it can be involved in various decisions with regard to the outcome of a woman's pregnancy. So I have the language here in front of me, and I think it's telling to actually state what it says. The
Go
relevant
ahead.
Part says, it is the policy, again, quote, this is FOCA, not me speaking.
Right.
It is the policy of the United States that every woman has the fundamental right to choose to bear a child, to terminate a pregnancy prior to fetal viability, or to terminate a pregnancy after fetal viability when necessary to protect the life or health of the woman.
Who's the main sponsor of it?
Barbara Boxer is a primary sponsor, as is Nadler.
In the House.
That's right.
Senator Boxer from California. And the bill has been around before, but it seems like it's been redrafted, and it wasn't as onerous. I mean, it was never good, don't get me wrong, but it seems like it's now considerably more onerous in terms of the changes that it could contemplate bringing.
That's right. The language goes on to say that it's all in the language of prohibition of interference with a woman's right to choose. And just, again, briefly, the actual language is that a government may not deny or interfere with a woman's right to choose. And then it goes on to say it may not discriminate against the exercise of the rights set forth in this bill in the regulation or provision of benefits, facilities, services, or information. So that does two things. That actually goes well beyond Roe versus Wade in saying that there can't even, say, be regulations of abortion clinics to make sure that they're so-called safe, right?
Right.
Safe for at least one person who goes in there. We know it's lethal for the child.
Taxpayer funding,
parental involvement with abortion decisions of their minor daughters.
This is totally hands-off. Yeah.
Totally hands off. It goes beyond the
existing,
the standard right in Casey, which is that if it somehow imposes, if a restriction or a regulation imposes an undue burden on women, then the state can't go there. FOCA totally railroads over that and says if there's any kind of interference whatsoever, even a slight one, it would be considered illegal.
312-751-1979. We're talking with Deirdre McQuaid of the Bishops Conference in Washington about FOCA. So I guess what you're saying to us in so many words is it's your opinion that perhaps the bill has never really moved much in Congress in the past because of the threat of a veto by the current administration. Has it ever gotten a hearing or anything in the recent last couple of years? Or?
Well, it was most recently reintroduced.
Okay.
After Gonzalez v. Carhart, when the Supreme Court in April 2007 decided finally to uphold the 2003 partial birth abortion ban, the federal ban. That ban was basically on ice and having no effect in saving human lives from 2003 to 2007. And then the Supreme Court decided that that was constitutionally sound, that the federal government was completely within its rights to say that just goes too far. This is too close to infanticide. This one particular form of abortion is so horrid that we will not, that bans against it can be considered constitutional. But if FOCA were passed, FOCA was reintroduced that same week as the Supreme Court decision, and they cited the dissenting opinion saying this is starting to undermine the fundamental right to abortion, et cetera. So there is a groundswell. Abortion advocacy groups are hopeful that a new administration, a new Congress would be able to pass this. So we really need to start gearing up to understand not only what FOCA does, but also to fight it in Congress.
And you are starting to do that, and we're going to hear a little bit about that. We have to take a quick break. It is 9:41 a.m. in Chicago, and we're going to talk a little bit about what the Bishops Conference is doing to get the word out about FOCA and its harsh ramifications, and also to keep this in mind as you're contemplating who to choose for your vote in the November election. The number is 312-751-1979. We're talking about the Freedom of Choice Act that has been introduced in Congress. It is not a good bill, and we need to be more vigilant in terms of being aware of it. This is Bob Gilligan. Come back after this brief message.
Catholic Campaign for Human Development awards financial grants to community groups that fight poverty and support positive change. Here's a few of those groups. The Brighton Park Neighborhood Council.
We strengthen our community through foreclosure counseling, parent patrols, and a youth jobs program.
The Logan Square Neighborhood Association.
We want to repopulate the Lathrop homes to help preserve an affordable, diverse community.
Lake County United.
We are campaigning for a charter high school to serve our far northern suburbs.
The Latino Union of Chicago.
We provide safety equipment and training for workers struggling to make ends meet.
The Progress Center for Independent Living.
We support people with disabilities in suburban Cook County to help them maintain their independence.
The Target Area Development Corporation.
We just celebrated a summer without murders thanks to our violence prevention programs.
Make Chicago and its suburbs a better place to live. Support the Catholic Campaign for Human Development.
Real men answer the call to the priesthood. Is God calling you?
You know, I'm honored to be a priest for the Archdiocese of Chicago. I think it's great.
There's a desire to want to give back and to help and to serve those who are especially in need.
I think there's a wonderful opportunity for us to bring good news to a world that's very much in need.
When I experience through my ministry someone being brought closer to the Lord, it's an exciting, thrilling moment.
If you feel God's call to a priestly vocation, contact us at 312-751-8298. Or visit our website at chicagopriest.com. John Paul II once said, "Do not be afraid. Open your heart to Christ. The deepest joy there is in life is the joy that comes from God. Jesus is the hope of the world. The people are calling. The world is calling. God is calling. Answer the call to the priesthood.
Welcome back to our show. We're talking with Deirdre McQuaid of the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops Pro-Life Office. We're talking a little bit about the Freedom of Choice Act, and it's pending in Congress. It's been reintroduced, and it's probably worse than ever. Deirdre, we were talking before the break about what the bill does specifically, but it looks like the Bishops Conference has a bit of campaign to make people more aware of it. Can you talk a little bit about what your efforts and what you're doing to try to get the word out?
That's right. We're doing a few different things, one of which has already been released. During the national conventions, both the Democratic and the Republican national conventions that just recently ended, we ran a series of ads, one of which was an ad fighting FOCA. And it appeals to people who say that they want to reduce the number of abortions. Most everybody, for the most part, is on record for saying, well, of course, we want to reduce abortions. But the reality is that FOCA is wholesale abortion promotion. So if you're all about at least paying lip service to reducing abortions, don't get behind FOCA. And so the ad is a kind of arresting image of, it's a bright blue background with a red stop sign, but it doesn't say stop, it says go. It's a mixed message, right?
Mm-hmm.
And our headline says, you can't reduce abortions by promoting abortions.
Right.
If you agree, oppose the Freedom of Choice Act, and we're encouraging Congress to pledge now to oppose FOCA, whether they have the opportunity to vote on it in this Congress or if they continue to be members in Congress in 2009.
Of the two presidential candidates, do the positions differ on FOCA? Senator Obama has made statements about supporting it if it were passed, I believe.
He's made a pledge to Planned Parenthood that it's the first thing he would seek to pass were he to be elected.
Has Senator McCain said anything about it, to your knowledge?
Not recently, no.
Okay, so as far as we know, he hasn't specifically said anything. I've read that as well about the Obama campaign and what was on it. And I'm sure that you're aware of, here in Chicago, there's been a considerable debate. Actually, I think it was during the week, Doug Kimmick, who I'm sure people are familiar with, we've talked about his name on our program before, wrote a story, a column that appeared in the Chicago Tribune, that's saying that Catholics could be against abortion and also support Senator Obama. And I know over the weekend there were many letters to the editor about that column, and many people wrote in expressing that, well, in fact, that was very difficult in terms of, at least on this particular issue, on the Freedom of Choice Act. So it's been a conversation piece out here in the Chicagoland area, perhaps because Senator Obama is from Illinois, or maybe the Tribune has just been printing those stories from Doug Kimmick, who, as everybody knows, is part of the Catholics for Obama campaign, I believe. Deirdre, the FOCA issue per se, then where does it go from here? They're coming back fairly soon. Congress is they're adjourning. They're coming back in the session. Is it this week?
I believe so. I don't have their
schedule. Okay. And so is it anticipated that FOCA, the current version, would be on the table between now and perhaps the end of this session, or do you think this is something for next year?
It may very well be up for next year, but it's something we need to start fighting now. We're not privy to the legislative schedule currently.
Okay.
But we don't want to be caught asleep at the wheel with regard to this. But something I'd also like to mention about FOCA is, regardless of other constructive efforts with regard to the economy or other incentives to encourage people positively to choose life for their children, and there are lots of different creative ways of going about that, and we would be in support of those measures, the reality about FOCA is that if there's a program that is designed and is funded by the government to assist women in choosing life for their children, FOCA would require, because it says that we can't, if this were passed, we wouldn't be able to discriminate against abortion. There would have to be equal and opposite funding for abortion promotion. So if FOCA's passed, it would undermine any possible additional constructive efforts out there to provide women with the much needed resources to choose life for their children and to sustain their families.
So that means if there's funding for like a maternal health program, there would have to be commensurate funding given for the promotion of
programs that promote childbirth would have to have an equal and opposite, it seems, according to FOCA, as it is right now, funding for promotion of access to abortion, so-called services.
Okay, we have to take a quick break. It is 9:49 a.m. here in Chicago. We have about 6-7 minutes left with Deirdre McQuaid. If you want to join our conversation, talk about FOCA, the Freedom of Choice Act, the number is 312-751-1979. We'll be right back.
Choosing an elementary school for your child is one of the biggest decisions you will ever make to shape your child's future. So why pick a Catholic school?
I want my kids to learn more than the three R's. They need a faith-based education so they make good decisions.
I want my son and daughter to go to college. At Catholic schools, attendance and graduation rates are nearly 100%. And when these kids graduate, they go to college.
My teacher is so cool. She knows who I am. She helps me when I have trouble figuring things out.
My son isn't a number. The student-teacher ratio is 18 to 1, and Catholic school teachers are really dedicated.
I want my daughter to feel welcome, to be safe.
The test scores are well above the national average. Look out, college. Here they come.
Go to www.archchicago.org and click on Schools to learn more about the great benefits of a Catholic education. Invest in your child's future. Make your child a winner for life.
Did you know that about 20% of couples in the United States experience the sadness of infertility? Join me, Mary Louise Curry, for Facing Infertility, a journey of faith, hope, and love on Sunday, September 21st at 12:30 p.m. at St. Clement Church. What treatments are aligned with our faith and are safe, affordable, and effective? How can we reach out to suffering couples in our families, our parishes, and our communities? All this and more will be discussed at Facing Infertility, a journey of faith, hope, and love on Sunday, September 21st at 12:30 p.m. at St. Clement Church, located at 642 West Deming Place in Chicago. For more information, call 773-332-7840. That's 773-332-7840. We hope to see you on Sunday, September 21st at St. Clement Church.
This is Bob Gilligan, and we're back with our show. We're talking with Deirdre McQuaid of the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, the pro-life office. If you want to join our phone call or our show here in the last 5-6 minutes or so, the number is 312-751-1979. Deirdre, we've been talking a lot about FOCA and the Freedom of Choice Act, and I think we've probably covered that sufficiently. I know that there's part of the promotion campaign that you were involved with. Not only talked about FOCA, but you have some other ads as well. And by the way, I should add that we have linked these ads that they have produced in Washington at the Bishops Conference to our website, and I believe Mary Louise Curry at the Respect Life office is doing the same thing as well. So I'd strongly encourage people to take a look at the ads. They're very well done, and I've seen the one on the on FOCA, and I know there's some others as well.
That's right. We did two ads on the abortion issue and two on stem cell research. They ran in Roll Call, which is a daily that is distributed here typically on Capitol Hill, but during the conventions it was papered all over both of those conventions in Denver and Minneapolis-St. Paul. The other abortion ad is from our Second Look Project, www.secondlookproject.org, and it simply states, got an image of an African-American woman, attractive woman, looking straight into the eye of the viewer.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, a human heart begins to beat at 22 days. That's 22 days after conception.
Mm-hmm.
And then it says, Roe versus Wade says, a doctor can stop it for the next 244. Have we gone too far?
Mm.
Now, of course, FOCA, one of the things it would undo is actually go beyond Roe and say that person stopping that fetal heartbeat for the next 244 days doesn't even have to be a doctor.
Really?
Yes. This is one of the scary things about FOCA, is it would not require abortions to be done by a licensed physician. It could be done by a physician who had lost his or her license, maybe even because they had botched an abortion.
Wow. I didn't see that. Was there any reaction, per se, from the ads in Denver or in St. Paul that you could pass along to us?
You know, I need to go and check and see if there was a bump up in our rate of people going to our
second
book project website. Yes. No, but we're getting these ads out more broadly for use in the diocese mm-hmm. and on Catholic college campuses. People can download them, can make them into flyers, use them for their own educational purposes for free, so long as you don't alter or edit or change them in any way.
Mm-hmm. The ads are very well done, and I'd strongly recommend everybody go to the second look. That's the second one?
Right, that ad is from the secondlookproject.org.
Okay.
But these ads are all found on our media page. It's a little long, www.usccb.org/pro-life/media. All four ads are there, along with others we've done in the past.
The challenges are many, and I think depending on what happens in the November election, we could see a lot of activity on this. I think one of the things out here that we always try to do with something like this is I think there's two strategies: is you can try to amend it and work with it, or you can just outright try to defeat it. I would imagine the strategy on FOCA is I'm sure there's not much there that we could amend and live with. So is the thinking being that try to get the word out as much as possible and create a groundswell of opposition to the bill in order to defeat it, or is there anything in here we could live with whatsoever?
There's nothing we could live with in this bill. This is not amendable redeemable.
Yeah.
This is an aggressive pro-abortion piece of legislation, federal legislation, that must be defeated, and it's going to be defeated largely because even representatives and senators who consider themselves pro-choice will see that this is just
going too far. The other thing, too, is I should add is, we were talking in the first part of our program about Catholic hospitals and Catholic ministries and some of the Catholic healthcare and some of the challenges they face. If FOCA were to pass, could Catholic healthcare continue in its present form?
Well, Catholic healthcare would be among the parties who would fight this
right.
very hard because it doesn't allow for conscientious objection.
Right.
Largely because if a hospital or an individual doctor were to, according to FOCA, in any way slow down a woman's access to exercising her so-called right to an abortion, that would be considered a burden that's interfering with her right to choose, and therefore such activity would actually be considered against the law.
Is there any thinking that perhaps if this bill were to get a hearing, that the reaction would be so negative that the perception could be that, well, sometimes in the legislative battles is the perception is, well, now we're just going too far, and that can create a backlash that might be able to help us. Is this one just going too far, and so we can more clearly see maybe some advocates are trying to do?
Well, I sure hope so. The
yeah.
Freedom of Choice Act is again a radical measure that would impose on the entire country, not just state by state, on the entire country an abortion regime far worse than anything wrought by Roe. And Roe is what we've considered to be, the
right.
complete logjam in terms of being able to actually restrict abortion and help women to choose life for their children, women and their families. So it's difficult to recall any other piece of legislation that in literally a single stroke of the president's pen would have such a destructive impact on the government's ability to regulate abortion.
We had something like this similar introduced last year in Springfield in Illinois. It was called the so-called Reproductive Health Care Act, and it was very similar to this, and I think some other states have seen similar types of legislation introduced at the state level, but never something on the national level like this. And last year I sensed that they were just throwing out there as a trial balloon to see how far they could go without not really thinking they could pass it, but I'm a little surprised that they would try it on the federal level as well, because I just don't see the numbers there to pass something like this. But that doesn't mean that we don't need to be particularly vigil in terms of opposing it.
That's right. And even if FOCA were not passed in its current extreme form,
mm-hmm.
again, as you pointed out, its
right.
most extreme form in the years that it's been around, it could inspire a cottage industry of other challenges to the abortion law.
Deirdre, we have to run. Thanks so much for joining us. The information was very good, very informative. And once again, please go to that website, check out the ads that are going on to oppose FOCA. We need to particularly get on that bill and see what we can do to oppose it. This is Bob Gilligan signing off. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next month with another show about a different public policy topic facing the people of the state of Illinois. Thank you.